Hey everyone, I'm Uni Ravindranathan.
I'm Hare Krishna Menon.
And we are both program managers working in Visual Studio and WPF. Today, we're going to take a look at WPF in .NET 4.6 and what we're doing beyond there. So let's get started. The agenda for today, like I said, primarily we're going to talk a little bit about the roadmap for WPF. How do we see WPF evolving over time? What are the kinds of things that people are asking us to do? And what are we doing in response to those asks? We'll do a bunch of demos. We'll show you some of the things we are doing in .NET 4.6 for WPF. And in Visual Studio 2015, we are adding a bunch of new experiences to make you a lot more productive if you're a WPF developer. We'll also actually today be previewing some of the investigations and prototypes we are doing along the roadmap that we're going to describe. So there's a bunch of demos that we're going to show you that you won't be able to use yet, but this is something that we are showing you just so we can get some feedback. We would love to hear as to what you guys think about some of these experiences. Where is it that you think there are issues? Where is it that we can do better, and so on and so forth. And finally, we'll spend some time answering questions that you might have, any of the feedback that you might want to share with us. So let's get started. Before demos, I just want to take a couple minutes to recap the roadmap that we had laid out for WPF maybe 2 months ago.
November 12th.
Yeah. So really well received. I mean, in terms of people who wanted to go out there, read it, give us feedback, a lot of mentions on Twitter. So we're really excited that there's so much excitement about this platform out there, and really the onus is on us to sort of take that feedback, put that into action, and build something that addresses your needs and your requirements that you've been very vocal about. One thing is, as you see some of these demos for WPF in .NET 4.6, this is just the start. We have a bunch of things in flight that we're not able to discuss and show today, but we hope you take a look at some of these things we are doing now and some of these things we'll be doing going forward to get an idea of how you see this trajectory happening over time. What are the main areas of investment that we see us doing short term over the next, 3 to 6 to 12 months? I would bucket them into the following categories. WPF is a very mature platform used by a number of enterprises out there. You name them, for building mission critical applications, large scale applications. We want to make sure that WPF remains a great choice for these companies building great apps. And some of the feedback that you see here is aligned to address and improve some of their experiences. So for example, performance is a top concern for us. These apps have large data requirements, in terms of lists and things like that. They care a lot about responsiveness to scrolling. They care about making sure that their data displays, which have a lot of information density on them, scales to their requirements. So a bunch of things that you'll see today, and of course going forward, we'll be focused on making these improvements bring these improvements to these customers out there. DX integration, DX12 hopefully becomes commonplace in the near future. A lot of content is going to be authored in DX12, and we want to make it possible for WPF apps to take this content and host it. So we're going to do a bunch of work to make it easy for people to host DX content outside of DX9, like DX11 and DX12, in a WPF application. Modern hardware, touch is already almost ubiquitous, and it's going to get a lot more going forward. High DPI, the DPIs for today's displays, 4K, etc. It's going to get more and more commonplace out there. We want to make it such that the apps, the WPF promise of looking great on DPIs and working with modern input mechanisms like touch continue to be there. And there's a bunch of work we have to do to improve the experience. If we're not there, you'll see some of the things that we are doing. And of course, we want to go from there. And then tooling. There's a number of features we're going to show today in Visual Studio 2015 that make it possible for you to build great apps. We're going to bring all of these investments to all of our XAML developers, and WPF, of course, is front and center. We'll show you a bunch of new experiences in VS 2015 to help you be more productive building apps if you're a WPF developer. With that said, I wanted to actually take one question that's on the board. Are there any plans to bring the blend designer features into VS instead of switching between them back and forth? We'll be talking about Blend today. We'll be actually showing what we're doing in Blend. We feel there is the necessity for an environment that makes it possible for you to focus on UI design, and there is the necessity for an environment that gives you a code-first experience that's focused on writing code and debugging. And we still believe the Visual Studio environment is better suited for the latter activity, and we do need a dedicated environment for building great user experiences, and we think Blend's certainly there. We're doing a bunch of work in Visual Studio 2015 to make the Blend environment even more productive. And more importantly, I fully acknowledge the fact that there is a way to sort of like there is a workflow where people have to switch back and forth between Blend and Visual Studio. We've taken the first small step to improve the workflow, and over time we will continue to make it better and better for you to sort of like focus on UI design and Blend and code editing in Visual Studio, as well as debugging and profiling and so on and so forth. We'll actually show you some of these scenarios in action, and then we'll go from there in terms of answering any questions. A couple of the questions. Will there be any new data grid controls in WPF? Don't want to use third-party grids. Short term, we don't have plans yet to build any sort of rich data visualization controls outside of what we have. That said, we think of the first level of investments we want to do going forward as being more enabling for people to sort of like build rich experiences, either on their end or as third parties. So the work we're doing to sort of, for example, improve scrolling responsiveness is all driven by some of these third-party controls who give us feedback that they just cannot do anything without us helping them. So our first line of action over the next few months is going to focus primarily on making it possible for these guys to be more productive on top of the platform. Over time, there is, of course, as newer and newer, scenarios come online in terms of visualizations, we'll reevaluate. But our first step is to make it such that people can build great controls on top of the platform. So do things that other people cannot. Anything else to add?
No, that's fine.
Okay, one final comment before we actually switch to demos, and I promise most of the rest of the session is going to be focused on demos. One question that we hear often, and it's in some ways a surprising question, but it's worth clarifying. People don't think of WPF as being well supported. That's not quite correct. I mean, WPF is an OS, .NET is an OS component, and WPF is just a part of .NET. The support for WPF is there. I mean, we hopefully will make it a lot better. Absolutely, that's in parallel. But if you're building an app, you should be pretty much assume Windows guarantees that the app continues to work release over release, and the same's true for .NET apps too. So you should be fully assured on that front. In addition to making significant leaps in terms of requests that you're giving us in terms of experiences, we also monitor all the normal forums like Connect and things like that. For example, one of the things we did in this last release is we actually went back to Connect, looked at all of the feedback that was previously not addressed, reactivated a bunch of things that got a bunch of votes on Connect, and we hopefully will address some of these in .NET 4.6 and beyond. So one great way of giving us feedback in terms of actionable things that we can do is to go to Connect, add your idea or suggestion, and vote it up. And we'll make sure that we take a serious look at the top issues that you might care about. With that said, like I promised, we're going to do mostly demos, and let's get started with seeing some of the things in WPF and .NET 4.6. With that, I'll switch it over.
So hey guys, what we did in 4.6, our primary focus was to fix customer reported issues. For example, there was a lot of we got a lot of feedback around the fact that there were some touch issues with 30, 35 votes that was not addressed, and we made it a point to address them and fix them in 4.6 itself. These issues generally were related to multi-touch and the performance of touch itself. When these issues are fixed, you can expect a much more reliable touch subsystem in WPF. Another area that we concentrated on was scrolling and virtualization improvements. We have now fixed a bunch of issues that will make it easier for you to have a consistent and reliable traversal in virtualized lists, as well as less chance of hangs happening due to layout cycles in virtualized controls like data grids or tree views. Now, on top of fixing customer reported issues and feedback, we have also looked into adding a couple of features in 4.6 itself. The first one I want to do a quick overview of is called Transparent Child Windows. So initially, WPF always supported using Hpend host or just Windows interrupt. We could host child Windows in WPF. But it was not really possible to have transparent child Windows. The ability to have transparent child Windows was added in Windows, in Windows 8.1. And in .NET 4.6, we have exposed that capacity in WPF. Let's take a quick look at a scenario that's going to be super useful. That's a scenario that can be now done in WPF using transparent child Windows. I'm going to switch to Visual Studio. So I have a pretty simple application.
You'll have to make sure that.
Yeah, one sec. Second.
There we go. That's much
better. There we go. So I have a pretty simple application, transparent child Windows. I'm going to hit F5 to show you what the application looks like. I'm kind of fooling you guys here. It's actually just an image of a game, but you get the idea. On the top right corner, I actually have a square, which I basically is a heads-up display that I want to show on my game. But it's not really possible before Windows 8.1 or in WPF 4.5.2, because when I hosted that particular ellipse or that particular HUD control on top of the Hpend host, it would basically give me a rectangular area with no opacity. As you know, in most games, you would prefer to have a heads-up display that is kind of transparent and blends into the game itself. So let's switch back to Visual Studio to make the necessary change that will enable transparent child Windows in this particular scenario. I'm going to switch back to VS, stop debugging. And to the Windows parameters, I'm just going to add a new property.
Windows.
Yeah. I'm going to set use per pixel transparency equal to true. I'm going to save and then hit and start debugging. Now you can see that the whole rectangular area goes away. The transparency is bleeds through. And it's pretty nice to actually have a scenario like this working in WPF. This feature requires Windows 8.0 and above and .NET 4.6. There is one tiny trick I didn't show before that is required for this feature to work. What you have to do is you have to add what we call an application manifest. Application manifest can be added from the add new item in Visual Studio. And in the application manifest, you need to enable this particular guy. Basically, you're saying your application supports Windows 8, and this enables this feature of transparent child Windows to light up in your application. If you don't do this step, you're guaranteed to have an exception when that code executes.
What happens if I add this manifest and run the exact same application on Windows 7?
No worries. It'll just work.
Except you will not just get the...
Yes. You'll basically have an issue. The particular piece of code will throw. So saying that, I'm going to switch back to my presentation, talk about a couple of other improvements that we have done in .NET 4.6. So, you know, you have an opaque HUD in 4.5.2, and you have a transparent HUD in 4.6. The next thing that we invested in, we did a whole bunch of fixes around high-density displays and supporting high-density displays. The first one people kept complaining to us about was, hey, you know, we have cursors, we have cursor files with different resolutions, but WPF doesn't really pick it up automatically. And hence, you would end up in situations where in 200% scale, you would have really crappy cursors. You would have cursors that are pixelated, doesn't look really all that well. And you had to write code on your end to detect these situations and load the right cursor. You no longer have to do that. We have added a new a parameter to the constructor for cursor, which allows you to pass scale with DPI. And here in this example, I'm basically allowing the cursor to scale with different DPI. And you can see the cursor looks really crisp, even in 100% scale, as well as 150% scale. So this is a super useful thing. It's kind of like MRT in Windows runtime, but this enables, at least for cursors and WPF, to scale automatically its assets based on this DPI of the display that the application is running under. The next improvement, it looks kind of tiny, but it's pretty important. We have been noticing for the last couple of releases that Visual Studio at 150% DPI and 125% DPI doesn't look all that great. We had a number of really UX-sensitive folks from a platform team keep telling us that, hey, you know, we're seeing combo boxes getting clipped. We're seeing buttons getting clipped. So we actually investigated this issue in this release. And what we found out that forever, we've been drawing the background of a border incorrectly. And this problem is very well, it shows up really well when you scale the application 150 DPI or 100 DPI. If you can see the left image, you can see the right edge of the combo box being thinner than all other borders. Seeing one, it's kind of irritating when a very UX-heavy interface like Visual Studio, you will see like everywhere, it is extremely irritating to the user. It makes your application look less polished. We have fixed the scaling issue in 4.6. As you can see on the image on the right, the borders are being drawn correctly, so you'll feel like your application is much more polished in others in higher scale DPIs than it was in 4.5.2. So that essentially wraps up some minor feature additions as well as bug fixes, as well as addressing customer feedback that we have done in .NET 4.6. Now I want to take some time and talk to you about some investigations we are doing in WPF for vNext. So as we thought about, as our team sat down and we started thinking about, hey, what should we do going forward, we had some goals in mind. And we wanted to frame what we were going to do based on those goals. The first one was we wanted to accelerate the cadence at which we can deliver framework improvements. You know, customers keep giving us feedback, and we want to make sure our response to it is fast. You get the bits, you get those changes as soon as possible. You necessarily don't have to wait for 6 months to a year to get those changes. The second one, we have a lot of customer asks, like Uni mentioned, that drove our areas of investment, and we want to make sure we deliver improvements in those areas, like performance, DirectX integration, modern hardware support. Finally, WPF is a system component. That means any change that we make to WPF in the inbox version might break a small set of apps. If we really have to do major things like support DX12 or rewrite WPF on top of DX12, it is a huge surgically invasive change. And it's almost guaranteed that there'll be some set of applications in the wild that will break. And we can't really afford that because WPF is a system component. So we have to be very careful. We want to make sure we maintain compatibility even in newer versions of WPF. We want to make sure the improvements that we are doing can be adopted by the maximum number of customers. That means it helps the maximum number of customers out there. And finally, .NET is in one way is pretty awesome. With Windows Update, we are able to deliver to you day zero updates or security changes without you having to worry about it, without you having to recompile your app, and so on and so forth. And we want to maintain that serviceability. We want to make sure that anything that is required for you, we are able to deliver instantly via Microsoft or Windows Update. Based on these principles or these goals, we evaluate a number of options. And the best option is what we call WPF App Local. This is the first time we're talking about this feature outside of our all hands or our team meetings. What App Local means is WPF platform assemblies are delivered to you as a NuGet package. Think about presentation framework, presentation core, Windows base. These assemblies will be available to you as a NuGet package. That means each app ships its own version of WPF. We guarantee we'll have similar and in many ways much better performance characteristics than the inbox version of WPF. It'll of course be built on top of .NET Desktop Framework, not necessarily .NET Core. We also make sure that because one of our goals was to make it a drop-in replacement, it will be highly compatible to the inbox version. So that's a brief overview of App Local. I'm going to show you a quick demo how App Local looks like in our internal builds.
By the way, it's worth reiterating that all of the things you're seeing here is early prototypes.
Yes.
You're just showing it out there so you can give us some feedback. We would love to hear your feedback. But this is something that is our latest and greatest thinking, and I hope you like it.
Yeah. All the tooling doesn't necessarily work all that well with App Local, so forgive there's going to be some errors here and there. So I'm going to switch to Visual Studio again. I'm going to set App Local demo as my startup project. It's a pretty simple app. You know, all it has is a mainwindow.xaml. I'm going to open mainwindow.xaml. It's got a bunch of controls like combo boxes, date pickers, time picker, etc. And I'll tell you why that's important in a short while. First, I'm going to open references, and I'm going to take a look at presentation core. You can see that presentation core is being referenced from reference assemblies, but at runtime, it's actually going to get loaded from the GAC. So this is the framework version that we ship with Visual Studio and your app runs against. I'm going to change that. What I'm going to do, I'm going to right-click on References, go to Manage NuGet Packages, select that. I already have a package source with my local WPF packages available. I'm going to select the x86 version and click Install. Going to hit OK. Keep looking at the Solution Explorer. You can see that we are removing a bunch of framework references and adding some new references. This takes a while. We do also change your CS proj to enable binding redirection and things like that, but we'll get that in detail later. Now, to prove that we have changed references, I'm going to select Presentation Core again. Let's go down, and you can see the change. It has been now the presentation core is being referenced from your local NuGet package that is local to your project, which is great. I need to do one more step to enable app local to work. This will not be required in a future version of this prototype. It's just something we have to do now. I need to enable binding redirection for presentation framework arrow 2, which is where my themes are coming from. So I've saved it. Now, Before I get into this, I want to show you this application in action. So I'm going to switch to a different instance of VS. I'm going to set that as start a project. So you can see that here, the element count for this application is 281. Let's keep that number in mind. 281 is the total number of elements you're seeing on the screen. This particular version of the project is referencing the desktop framework. And I'm going to now switch back to my app local version and execute that. I'm going to close this version. Come back to the version that now has app local references. You can see it here. I'm going to hit F5. This is the first error I talked to you about. The next FY will work. It's like clockwork. So the application got launched. You can see that all I did was make a change to app config, add a NuGet package, and instantly my application is now targeting app local WPF. And I want to prove that to you. I'm going to switch back to VS. I'm going to go back to my module list, my loaded module list, sort by name, find presentation core, and take a look at the path. It's actually being loaded from my local NuGet package instead of the GAC. So that proves to you that your application is now running against app local WPF, which is pretty awesome. Also, we have seen the element count 230. You see that it's almost 50 elements less than what you would expect in inbox desktop.
For the exact same visuals.
For the exact same visuals. All I did was add a NuGet package, right? We'll get into why that's in detail. But that is one of the things that we want to focus on is better performance, better overall reliability and performance in the app local version. We'll be able to make significant performance improvements, and we'll be able to work with you to maintain compatibility because applications will have to opt in and use app local version. And we'll be less hesitant about making changes because we don't have to worry about system-wide compatibility as much. So before we get into how we managed to get element count down so much, I want to spend a few seconds reiterating what app local is. So app local essentially, I'm going to stop debugging for a sec. App local essentially is inbox replacement for your framework assemblies. It's a simple NuGet package that each app can consume, build against, and deploy. It is going to be much more performant because we're going to have new features that enable for you to do so. It's going to have the customer ask or investigations that you have wanted us to do because we'll be able to make that much more confidently. We would love to hear feedback on this. So this is one of the primary things, like Uni said, that we want to hear what you think about. And we'll have a slide at the end with our Twitter handles as well as the external facing Microsoft alias that you can email us. We would love to hear your feedback on app local WPF.
Yeah, I mean, like Hari said, the changes that you're seeing here, we think of that as the stepping stone for us to take some more bolder changes into WPF, which we would not have been able to do otherwise, just because, like, we change something and then some app out there, given that it's very widely adopted out there, will break, and it's really hard to ensure compatibility. So while we really would like to do absolutely everything we can to be highly compatible, we can certainly take a little bit more risks, hear your feedback, and immediately act on those risks without like a significant turnaround time. So that's our thinking here.
Makes sense. So let's.
So the question, one of the questions we're seeing on the board is, will a first-class WPF experience ever be offered from PowerShell? PowerShell would benefit greatly from being able to easily interact with WPF. I don't know how to directly answer that question. I mean, PowerShell is the way I think about it, or at least I'm not a PowerShell expert, but it's primarily used for automating administrative deployment type of scenarios. You know, that's at least my exposure to it. WPF's packaging mechanisms continue to work, and hopefully we can definitely do a little bit more to make it possible for people to script some of the things like packaging and things like that. Can you think of anything else for PowerShell?
Unfortunately, no. Like, I think what Trevor is asking here is actually building a small admin kind of apps using PowerShell. But that unfortunately is not on the roadmap yet. We would love to for you to reach out to us and let us know what scenarios you think are important here, and we can definitely have a discussion on that. The second question is Prism Framework also moves to vNext? Actually, Prism released a 5.0 version last year, which is highly compatible with 4.5.2 and definitely works great with 4.6. But we're not planning to integrate Prism into, let's say, the when you install the app local NuGet package, we're not planning to automatically bring in
that
Prism.
Said, we'll ensure compatibility.
Exactly.
We'll make sure that the most common scenarios that you use out there, at least we'll do our best to make sure that they're compatible, so you don't really have to worry about, oh, if I'm using, let's say, AppLocal WPF or .NET 4.6, will my apps break? I think we'll try to do as many things as possible in a compatible way.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to switch back to the question of the elements, right? It suddenly became from 280 elements all to 230 elements. Let me go back to my slides. And what we did to enable this is we have a new concept in AppLocal WPF called content deferral. What content deferral means, you're now able to defer the creation of parts of a visual tree until you need it. A classic example is a disabled visual of a combo box. I believe the disabled visual of the standard combo box template is over 10 elements, which sometimes you never ever see in an app. So why are you paying the cost up ahead for creating those elements? What you can do in the new version is use x: defer load strategy and set to lazy. That means none of these elements will be created unless one of these things happen. A trigger tries to access or set something on that particular element, the runtime will automatically create that element for you. If a visual state or an animation tries to access that element, we will create it before the animation can use it. And finally, you can also realize that element from your code. This is amazing because what you saw the previous demo, we actually optimized a bunch of controls, default templates in the platform. And in some cases, we are able to see 10% improvement in application startup and memory. You can also use the x: defer load strategy property in your code to basically defer parts of your content. We believe that is where you'll get the maximum gains because you know your code. You know what parts of a visual tree does not have to be created on load or paid startup, etc. So you can basically then essentially add this attribute and it just works. So we think it's going to be a really nice feature going forward to improve scenarios like Uni mentioned, like scrolling, page load, application startup. One of the ways we can do it is make sure there are not unwanted elements on the screen. Some internal studies that we did on modern applications, we saw that there was almost 40% of elements that was created on application startup was never laid out or never participated in it. So these kind of features will help us improve those performance.
By the way, one thing that's worth calling out is while we could have done this feature in desktop WPF 4.6, there is a good chance that somebody has a dependency on a particular visual tree structure or something like that for the native controls that WPF has. And a change like this, believe it or not, could break an app out there.
Yeah.
Like, I think the chances are not very high,
yeah,
but there's always a chance. And what we are using this is also as an example of a change that, you know, is something that we can definitely take a step, see how people think, and then go forward from there, as opposed to always think about compatibility and risk of breaking existing apps and never having to change anything. So
yeah,
we picked this, and there's a lot more things in that we're doing. We picked this particularly to highlight an example where we could make a change in a bold way and still hopefully get some benefits out of it without actually having to worry about compatibility as much, right? Like, yeah. we think it's going to be a fairly compatible change when we do it,
yeah.
but there's always a risk, and yeah. we want to be acknowledging that.
Uli is absolutely correct. For example, what's actually happening here, the element is not even created. So if you're actually walking the visual tree of a template and you're dependent upon this element being there, it's not there anymore because it's deferred. So we believe some people, you know, there'll be a small set of folks who's actually walking these trees kind of scenarios, they might break because of this change. So saying that, there's a couple of areas that we are seriously investigating, but we don't have anything, we can't really disclose anything on those ends at this point, or we're not going to demo this, but those things essentially are DX interop. As Uni mentioned, there was a core, you know, core part of our investment, what we want to do in WPF, and what we're trying to do here, how can you make it easy or seamless for customers to surface DX11 and DX12 content in WPF. Hopefully we'll be able to share more on this during Ignite and Build and other future conferences. Finally, we want to do modern styles and touch improvements. An example of what we believe in modern styles is that when you're in Windows 10, we want WPF apps to look great. There is somewhat of a new design language when it comes to in Windows 10, and we want to make sure WPF applications represent that in the best way possible. So that's what we mean by Windows 10. Also, we want to make sure that we do some touch improvements, like there is a complaint that, hey, WPF does not play well with the on-screen keyboard. We want to fix that. We want to make sure you can use both stylus as well as on-screen keyboard simultaneously on WPF applications. That kind of summarizes what we believe are the major areas of investigation going forward. I'll hand it over to Uni. To talk about what we've done for tooling in Visual Studio 2015.
Yeah, I mean, and just to sort of summarize what Hari said, over time, we want to make it such that we are really transparent with our backlog. This is just the first step. As we crystallize some of these improvements in terms of things that you can use and quickly adopt, we'll want to transition to a model where we maintain sort of like an open backlog of the kinds of things we are doing, so you can provide us feedback and input on those scenarios that we're going after, whether it's useful to you or not.
We should probably take that question.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because that's a good segue into our next session.
So one question is, there will be some native support for MVVM pattern. What RAF believes is needed is change to WPF to send events on view changes, VS.NET templates to support basic MVVM implementation. We actually totally agree. Like, I think MVVM pattern should in some ways be, you know, represented in VS. One of the things we're looking at in the future is probably a template that actually has app local WPF by default. And we could probably have a template or a checkbox that says, hey, do you want to bring in Prism also together, right? So that's definitely some of the ideas we're playing with to see, hey, can we create new VS templates at least that will support people to build applications on MVVM pattern pretty easily.
Yeah, and Raf, if you can get in touch with us, you'll see our email at the end of this presentation about the specific event you're looking for. Because view change in a single page application like a Windows Store app today, it's easier to quantify that as a page transition or something like that. But in an LOB application, it's where there is like multiple documents and multiple views playing with each other. It's not entirely clear as to what a view could look like, mm-hmm. but we'd love to hear from you if you have a specific example, and you know that's something that we can consider as well. Okay, shall we switch over? Okay, so over the next 10 minutes, we're going to show you some of the experiences that we are building in Visual Studio 2015 to help you be more productive building a WPF application. So let's get started. Somebody had a question about Blend at the beginning of the presentation, and let's talk about Blend. One of the things we are doing in Visual Studio 2015 is we are making, hopefully, Blend a far more productive environment for you than it was in Visual Studio 2013. We are actually leveraging a number of technologies in Visual Studio, let's say the Solution Explorer or the Code Editor, and basically overlaying some of the unique capabilities of Blend on top of that experience. Now, you could always say, hey, why don't you take all of the Blend functionality and add that to Visual Studio, like I described at the beginning. We would love to get to the point where the Blend experience is super optimized and focused towards your UI design task, and Visual Studio remains a code-first development experience. So us adding more and more capabilities just complicates that code experience even further. I mean, there are certainly tweaks we'll do over time to this experience to make it really seamless for you to switch between Blend and Visual Studio. But we still believe that if we were to take all of the capabilities of Blend and put that into Visual Studio, your code editing experience certainly got a lot more rougher. And we would love to have an environment where we can focus on providing some of the best design tools out there. So okay, let's take a quick tour of Blend. The first thing you'll notice if you take a look at Blend is we've introduced a dark theme to basically allow you to focus more on the content that you're designing as opposed to the Chrome. This is the theme that we're calling it Blend for now. Is darker in some ways than the Visual Studio dark theme, intentionally for the reason I indicated before, right? But we continue to support the dark theme and the light theme that Visual Studio has. So if that's your preference, you can certainly do that as well. But on the screen here, you're seeing Blend with its dark theme. Just like you'd expect, there's a Solution Explorer. We are not using the Visual Studio Toolbox. We have brought the Blend asset panel into Visual Studio because it's a lot more richer in terms of capabilities. It has behaviors integrated, and it is a much richer experience than the Visual Studio Toolbox. We feel that was necessary for sort of allowing users to put their content together. It shows styles and assets in your project and so on and so forth. The Visual Studio Toolbox is not there. Just like you'd expect, it has the object and timeline tree, states and triggers, and the data panel that allows you to create sample data. So we've taken all of the Blend experiences that people loved and brought them over into Visual Studio and then combined with some of the unique, powerful capabilities that Visual Studio already had, and we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. The Blend design surface has what we call the asset tool strip that allows you to quickly create assets. Like you can select the selection tool or the sub-selection tool, but you can also create commonly used assets like the controls or the shapes and things like that. So all that is there. But let's take a look at some of the new things that we're building in Blend for Visual Studio 2015. The very first thing I wanted to focus on was some of the things that we're doing to make it productive for you to use the designer, but at the same time, we also realize that you might need to fall into the XAML editor to make some tweaks, and we don't want you to constantly switch back between that Visual Studio and Blend. So let's say you're doing visual design, and you're sort of like creating some UI, and you want to make a change. Let's take a look at this button. Let me go ahead and switch back to the selection tool. I'm going to select the button, and let me edit the template, right? Something that we are very familiar with being a WPF user. The thing you'll notice is that the template, oops, that just scrolled out of view somewhere. Where is it? Let me do it again. Let's do this one more time. Yeah. It does something. All right, better. The thing to notice here is that the template itself is coming from a different document, in this case, app.xaml. When you edit the template, we offered you with an in-situ experience where we brought the contents from the external document right in place to where you're editing so you can be more productive. So in this case, you can see contents in app.xaml right in place where you're editing it. So let's go ahead and change the background of this button. So let's make it red. And you'll notice that as soon as I did it, app.xaml opened up in the background. It's still not something that you have to worry about. The change is live in terms of the fact that the visual design surface, if you scroll a little bit, updated in real time, and you are essentially right in context of making that edit. So hopefully using this new experience that we call XAML Peak, we hope you'll be a lot more productive using the XAML editor capabilities of Blend and Visual Studio. But let's take a look at a couple of the other capabilities of Peak. So the very first thing, like you'd expect, you can right-click on any resource, anything in your project, and hit Peak Definition. We'll bring it right where you need it, so you can make a quick tweak to it. You don't have to navigate to the particular resource, make a change, and come back and visualize it. Everything you can do right in there. The other thing is if you select an event handler, so in this case, let me try to find something in the project. So if I hit selection, I'm seeing an event handler here. You can do peek into code as well. So I can right click on the event handler, hit peak definition, and I can see my event handler right in situ as well. So I can make a change to the code if I need to for a quick event handler operation right inside my XAML editor. So the XAML peak features help you be more productive in sort of like making changes to your code or other assets right in situ. Okay, let me show you one last thing in Blend, and then we'll switch over to a different experience. So let me go ahead and edit this exact project in Visual Studio. So I'm going to right click. Let me first let's do a save all. Oops. Save all. Let's go ahead and right click and edit this particular file in Visual Studio. Let's make a simple change. I don't really think it matters as to what we change. So let's go ahead and put a new line here and save. Let's switch back to Blend, something that you would do very often as you're migrating across products. When you switch back to Blend, you get a dialog that says, hey, do you want to reload your files? And this is something that we kind of have come to expect, but something that we hate. One of the things we did working with the Visual Studio team is to make it such that you can permanently get rid of this dialog. So we have added a checkbox here, which says automatically reload the files unless there are any changes. So I'm going to go ahead and select this checkbox. And for one time, I'm going to say, OK, great, go ahead and load this change. Nothing really changed in terms of I just made a blank edit. Let's go back to Visual Studio over here and make a change that we can see. So let's go ahead and change this grid's background to red and save the change and go back to Blend. Now what you'll notice is that without you getting prompted for any sort of dialogue, we automatically detected the fact that a file has changed and reloaded the experience. So we've taken the first step, I think, in making it possible for you to easily navigate between Blend and Visual Studio without a lot of annoying dialogues and things like that. But this is just the first step. You want to do a lot more, but we have to get started somewhere. So with that said, I'm going to switch gears into showing you a completely different experience. Let's go ahead and run this application. And let's wait for it to boot up for a second. So the app is running. When I switch back to Blend or in Visual Studio, because this experience is available in either product, we have introduced UI debugging tools for XAML. What that really means is you can start seeing the visual tree representation of your running application inside Blend and Visual Studio, and it is live. So here I'm seeing my visual tree, and over there, if I select a particular element, let's say I select the main window, I can see all of the properties for main window, and I can go ahead and edit them as well. But before we do that, let's go ahead and select the selection tool and switch back to the application. So now what I can do is I can go ahead and select a particular element. So in this case, I'm going to select this date field. And then when I switch back, you'll see that we have automatically discovered that particular visual element, navigated to it, so you can start making some changes to it. I don't really want to change the text block. What I want to do is change the data grid column itself. So let me go ahead and select somewhere in here. I can see a data grid column header. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to change the horizontal content alignment from left or center to left. So when I did this, what's happening is we have now, it's think of this as a debugging watch window. We have pushed the edit to the running application. And when I switch back to the running application, Alt-Tab, you'll see that the data grid column is now on the left, right? So we have made a change and pushed it into the running application and allowed you to sort of like visualize that change in the running application. This tool will help it, will make it possible for you to quickly inspect UI issues, data binding issues, et cetera, in your application, and then fix it, and then get it reflected back in the application as well. One thing I wanted to show you before I turn over to Hari is, let me go ahead and turn off the selection tool and do a quick browse. Oh, before I do that, notice how the element count, let's go ahead and minimize all of these guys. Notice how the element count is 6, 7, 4, 5. Notice what happens when I'm doing a scroll operation. So what's happening behind the scenes is new elements are getting generated. It's all virtualized, and newer and newer UI elements are getting created. When I come back to Blend, you will see that the line number, the number of elements is now updated. So the tree is live. Every time you make a change to your application, including navigating pages and things like that, we track those and we make it such that you don't have to ever hit the refresh button to visualize what's going on and so on and so forth. One other thing worth calling out is we also have implemented via a change in .NET 4.6, the ability to visualize your line number information. So over here, you can, as you mouse over it, you will see that this particular element comes from main window, and I can keep doing. Let's take a quick look at our favorite button that we were manipulating before. So let's go ahead and select the button. And if I go back to Blend and take a look at this particular element, it's coming from app.xaml, as you remembered from the previous demo that we did. So we've made it possible for you to navigate and find elements in your tree and move back and forth and make edits to it as well. With that said, I'm going to switch over to Hari to show you a couple of other experiences before we conclude.
So I'm going to show you a new tool called the XAML Timeline Tool, which we have released in this release, which we released in Visual Studio 2015. This allows you to see a scenario-centric view of your application's resource consumption. Before that, I want you to spot what's different in my VS. Like, you know, Uni is a Blend guy. I'm more of a VS person, and I like the fact that I just see my XAML code most of the time. As you can see, my XAML editor is essentially just the editor. There is no design tab, there is no toolbox, there are no other designer views in VS. With the ability, like with the release that we have done for Blend this time, we believe Blend is a great standalone, amazing design tool. And if you really want a code-focused authoring environment in VS, what you can do is go to Tools, Options, XAML Designer, and you can actually turn on the designer. When you turn this off, the IntelliSense is completely driven on the host side. There is no designer process, there is nothing. And you'll be able to have a very code-focused environment while coding in Visual Studio. Now I'm going to talk about the Timeline tool. So this application is a slightly different version of what Uni had shown in his Blend demo. I'm going to hit F5. Okay, sorry.
Too many instances.
Yeah, let me just open the right instance. Give me one sec, guys. I will know whether it's, okay, this is the right instance. I'm gonna hit F5. You can see that the startup is kind of slow, right? The whole UI is hanging. All I have is a title. It's not that great experience. We would expect your applications to load like almost instantly, but this app is not. And I really want to use the new tools in Visual Studio to find out why. So in order to do that, I'm going to switch back to VS, go to Debug, show Diagnostic Tools without debugging. At this point, it opens what we call the Performance and Diagnostics Hub for WPF applications. It shows all the profiling tools available for your startup project. In this case, I have already selected CPU usage and the new Timeline tool.
This is a tool that we added in Visual Studio 2015.
15, yes. And I'm going to hit start. At this point, the Visual Studio launches the application under the profiler, and it's collecting a whole bunch of EDW traces from the CPU providers as well as the WPF EDW provider. Application is loaded. I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio and hit stop collection. We are now analyzing all the performance data that we've collected during the application's execution, and shortly we'll show a report. You can see that in this report, we're actually showing you what your application did during its execution. We show a couple of graphs to help you understand the problem areas in your code. The first one is called the UI thread utilization. It tells you what was happening on a UI thread. As you know, freeing up the UI thread is the easiest way to maintain app responsiveness. And we break down the usage into scenarios or concepts you can understand. Things like, hey, parsing, layout, render, IO thread, especially disk, app code, and other XAML subsystems. You can see applications, and we have a second graph that is a FPS graph. It shows the frame rate throughput of your application for both your UI thread as well as the composition thread in Desktop Window Manager. I want to really troubleshoot application startup. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to switch to application startup, the event, select that event, and say filter to event. At this point, we select the portion of the application's execution that is tied to the startup. And I can see that a whole bunch of events like parsing, layout, everything is happening, but I can't really explain why it's taking almost 8 seconds. I'm going to switch to CPU usage to see whether it's going to give me more data. I'm switching to CPU usage, and you can see a whole bunch of code is being executed. This looks like 92% of total execution. I'm going to expand that. This looks like 90.52%. I'm going to expand that. And you can see main window.loaded is taking the maximum amount of time. I'm going to troubleshoot this particular method. So going to go back to the code. I'm going to put a breakpoint at start of the method. I want to see why it's taking so much time or how much time this particular function is taking. I'm going to put a breakpoint at the end of the method. I'm going to hit F5 to debug the application. The app is launched. It hits that particular breakpoint. I'm going to continue execution. So it looks like in my code, I'm actually talking to a web service, getting a bunch of historical stock information and processing it all in the UI thread. And do you notice a perf tip here? This perf tip is a new improvement, a new addition to Visual Studio 2015. It's telling me that between these two breakpoints, it took me almost 6 seconds. And that is a clear, it helps me clearly understand that, hey, I actually, this function is what's causing the problem in my application startup. So I'm going to stop profiling. I'm going to get this particular network use run on a different thread. Sorry. I'm running this whole piece of code on a different thread. I know for a fact, because I'm setting some properties, it's going to throw an exception. So I'm just going to add a dispatcher here so that. So all looks good. I'm going to run my function again. I'm going to run the application again. Hits the first breakpoint, hits the second breakpoint. It only took 4 milliseconds from 6 seconds before, because the majority of the work is now done by a different thread. But the best part is my app is now somewhat more responsive. I'm able to see something. My application is not hanging for the first 8 seconds of its lifetime. So this is how you can use the new perf tips, diagnostic tools during debugging, diagnostic tools, and profiling tools after debugging, that is not integrated with debugging, to troubleshoot a lot of performance and correctness issues in your app. So that is it for my demo. I'm going to let Oni take over now.
OK. So just to wrap up before we open up the floor for questions, and we are seeing a few of them on the board there. Just give us 2 seconds. To summarize, we showed you the brand new Blend experience. We showed you some of the work we're doing in the XAML language service to make it much more performant and reliable, and at the same time bring some of the capabilities that you have loved in C# and C++, like Peek and things like that. We showed you a brand new experience for inspecting your application for UI issues, debugging issues, the XAML UI debugging tools, and we showed you some of the diagnostic tools as well. We're doing a lot of work in Visual Studio 2015 to help you be more productive. Like we discussed at the beginning of this presentation, we would love to share a lot more information with you and more specifics about when you can use some of the platform capabilities we showed you. The VS capabilities are available there today, and they will get better over time by the time you're done with Visual Studio 2015. But at Build and at Ignite, we will be more specific about our entire backlog. When can you actually start using some of these features for your applications and things like that. But in particular, we are next Monday, I think.
Yeah, next Monday.
We are doing an event live with our development team to particularly talk about App Local WPF. So we'd love for you guys to connect to that event. The URL is on the screen, and take a look at that particular event. We'd love to interact with you to talk specifically about WPF and what we can do better. So please do take the time to share that feedback with us.
Yeah. it's a live event, so you can ask us questions, and we can definitely get into more details around performance characteristics and stuff about AppLocal WPF.
Yep. We have an alias, wpfteam@microsoft.com, so please do send your feedback, and in particular, Raf, you had some questions around changes to, you know, events for implementing view changes. So please do send that feedback to us. We'd love to hear. We have a blog, so going forward, as we want to be more concrete about some of these things we have seen here, we will start updating the blog with this information, and we have our email on Twitter aliases handles as well. So absolutely feel free to get in touch with us, get us some good feedback. We'd love to make it this amazing platform a lot more productive for you guys, you know. And with that said, we will open up the floor for any questions. I'm seeing one on the board, which is, will you be able to share XAML with WinRT apps? And we acknowledge the fact that building multi-platform apps, in particular multi-platform Windows client apps using XAML, is non-trivial. Like there is a lot of differences. Like the especially WinRT XAML doesn't have all of the capabilities that WPF XAML has. WinRT XAML has some things that WPF doesn't. I think this problem is not easy to solve, to be very honest with you. I mean, we investigated a bunch of options to allow you to do, you know, conditional compilation and things like that. We will certainly continue to investigate all tooling improvements. Whether both of the platforms will support each other's features, and there's going to be like some harmony there. That's a good question. I mean, we'll continue to bring some innovations that have happened in WinRT onto WPF. But more importantly, WPF has a very solid user base, and our highest priority is to go address the requirements of that user base. So that's going to be our top priority versus some sort of functional parity and porting between WinRT XAML and WPF XAML. And the other question is, are there any plans to open source WPF so external developers can contribute back? This is a good question. I mean, what we have seen here with AppLocal WPF, certainly what we think of that as the first step necessary, because open source or not, at the end of the day, it's about you having say in the changes in the platform that we're making, and your decision or our decision not impacting all of the apps out there. So we've taken the first step. I mean, over time, and we'd love to hear your feedback. We'd love to sort of see where we want to go there, and we should keep the conversation going.
Before we actually do open source, we want to develop more in the open, like Oni said. You know, we want to tell you what we're doing. We want to gather feedback based on that, and then make decisions on our product end. So going forward, yes, it's definitely a great idea to think about.
Yeah. With that said, I think we're out of time. So we thank you for taking the time to attend this session. Please do give us some feedback. And once again, thank you.
Yeah. Bye.